I mean, you can imagine how life is, staying next to the garbage dump, like going on another planet, you know. There's stray dogs everywhere. At night, there's almost no public lighting. There's no plumbing. There's no nothing. People rely on one or two fountains to drink water. Everything is polluted. And this is, again, another problem. Like,
welcome into Priced Out, the podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Morgan, alongside Cornelius Swart. How you doing today, man?
Good, man. I am doing good. As you know, I just got back from Colombia.
What brought you there?
Well, my family's from Colombia. My mother was born in Panama, but the family is from Barranquilla. And we had actually planned a giant family reunion with the family for my aunt's 80th birthday. We were going to go to Cartagena, and we bought our tickets, and I got my daughter and my girlfriend to all come down, and then the reunion fell apart, and it was just us three. But that was okay. It was great. We were in Cartagena.
Yeah. That's fun, man. I mean, like, that's great to be able to do international travel and, you know, bring Priced Out everywhere.
Yeah, we went to a place in Medellin, which is where, you know, if you know Narcos and the kind of the whole drug trade sort of was the center, was Medellin for many years. And we went to a place called Comuna 13, or Community 13, which was the deadliest neighborhood in the world outside of the Gaza Strip for many, many years. And this neighborhood in recent years, since the end of the drug war, since a truce, has flowered with revitalization and art and murals. They've built this giant escalator, the world's largest public escalator.
To where?
It just goes up and down this hill. It's like a favela where people have built their own homes, but it's on this incredibly steep hill. And so they've just built an escalator as the best way to get people up and down.
Wow.
And then all these sort of shops and stores have bloomed along the escalator. Yeah. And there's just like thousands of tourists that come in to see this area. And I'm sure it's going to be gentrified next. There's already a coffee shop that was like serving
alongside
espressos.
The escalator.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the escalator at the JCPenney's, it's been broke for a few months here in Vancouver. So I would love to see a working escalator.
It's weird because you're looking at these like colorful sort of like shanty townhouses, and then you'll turn around and you'll look at the escalator and there'll be some like pasty white tourist in a floral shirt with a giant camera coming down like it's Lloyd Center. You know, it's a very strange thing.
So what do we have for him today?
Well, speaking of international gentrification, today is the day that Priced Out goes global. We were approached a few weeks ago by a young man in Cluj, Romania. He is a tenants' rights activist in one of the big cities in Romania, and he wanted to screen Priced Out. And he said, you know, I'm really interested in this. We're trying to raise awareness and rally people around housing issues. And can we screen Priced Out? And I was like, sure. That'd be great. I sent him the film, and we just agreed that, you know, have him on the show and talk about what's going on there. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about that.
That's good. I'm excited about it. So you ready to get into it, or what do you got? You got something else? Because I feel like we need to be a little bit prepared too.
Yeah. Romania, where is Romania?
I was going to ask that question. I was going to, because I had never actually heard of
Romania.
Well, I've heard of Romania, but I've never heard of the town he's from.
Right, Cluj. So Cluj is in the it's in the center of Transylvania. It's the unofficial capital of Transylvania. No jokes.
Yeah,
it's a real place. And Romania itself is sort of like between Germany and Russia is what, you know, sort of to the northeast of Italy. In that Central European block of countries that were formerly communist, and in the last 20 years since the end of communism, Cluj and apparently the other big cities, Bucharest, have been caught in between sort of the failures to create a private economy and a new pressure as big multinational investment comes in. And so the local university's architecture and planning school described the situation in Cluj as the city is in a transition from a post-socialist industrial core to a new self-proclaimed IT center. And it shows different patterns of gentrification ranging from the commodification of its historic town center to a soft hipsterification through arts and mollification on the peripheries in the suburbs and gated communities that are developing. So in some ways it's classic gentrification. In other ways, it's something that we've never encountered before, at least on this show. And we're going to talk with Vlad Mureșan, who is joining us via Skype from Cluj.
All right, let's get into it.
Hi, folks. I'm here today with Vlad Mureșan from the Cluj Tenants Association. He's Skyping in from Cluj, Romania. And thanks so much for joining us, Vlad.
Hey, thanks for the invite.
So what is Cluj Napoca? What is it like? Tell us just what your city is like.
Yeah, well, I don't know how many people actually heard of Cluj Napoca. It's actually like right in the heart of Transylvania. So to give you a bit of like context, Cluj is a university city. It has about 300,000 people population, about 100,000 students over that. And it's a pretty small city that has been growing a lot in recent years. And this has meant that there's a lot of pressure on the housing market, so prices have been growing up a lot during the last 5 or 6 years.
How big is the city overall? 300,000, you say?
About 400,000 people, okay. Yeah.
And it's an old city, too. The center of it is quite old.
Yeah, it's a historical city. Actually, Napoca is the old Roman name. And it used to be like the border of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, so it has a bit of tradition. Mm. This is also one of the problems because it's full of historical buildings, so it's very hard to actually build new buildings. Because like, the city is also constructed in a valley. It's bordered by some hills, you know, so it isn't that much land where you can actually build new apartments and new houses. So there's also this type of crisis now.
And it looks just like a beautiful area. It's like a forested region, hilly, mountainous, and the city is just a pretty beautiful medieval type city.
Yeah, if you look at the center, yeah. But like most of Romanian cities, like even the historical ones, like the city, they maintain the center like this, but on the outskirts and the rest of the districts, they're basically like the typical, you know, communist districts, mm-hmm. with littered with flats and that look pretty much the same.
So what is the problem? What are you guys experiencing there? And just so that, well, we've already covered the introduction with that, you know, we're going to do a screening of Priced Out. So let's just go on. What's going on there right now?
Basically, there are two big problems now. One is the rent. Like the rent has been increasing steadily over the last 5 or 6 years, something like 15-20%.
Wow.
And like to make an idea, like one apartment like with two rooms, the rent is about 450-500 euros. And you have to take into consideration that the minimum wage in Romania, and now almost 50% of the country is working on the minimum wage, is about 350 euros. Mm. So the minimum wage doesn't even cover rent in Cluj, you know. And the other problem is, Yeah, the other problem is social housing. In Romania, the social housing stock is very small. Like, if you look at the statistics, about 98% of the buildings of the apartments in Romania are privately owned. Like 2% are owned by the state, and they're not really building anything. So now a lot of people that would actually, that are struggling inclusion would require social housing cannot afford rent. So they're moving outside the city or they're living in informal settlements. So these are like the two biggest issues right now facing the housing situation inclusion.
Mm-hmm. So you are a member of the Cluj Tenants Association. What does that group do?
Basically, we started this initiative about two and a half years ago. We started noticing that there were a lot more and more people who are complaining about the rent, yet nobody had any idea about what to do. You know, so we actually tried to mobilize these energies, tried to look what's happening in other places. We drew a lot of inspiration, you know, for places like Germany or the UK, where they have the same problems for years now. So basically, we decided to go in two ways. One is the more political activity, where we try to basically lobby for rent regulation and rights for tenants. And the other, we're just offering support to tenants who need legal advice, who need a lawyer, who need any kind of advice regarding renting an apartment.
And where are you from personally?
I was born in Cluj, but then my parents moved away to a smaller town, like 100 kilometers from Cluj. And after that, I came back to Cluj to study at the university, and then I just stayed here. And I've been living in Cluj for 11 or 12 years now.
Hmm.
I've been renting ever since.
And you've been a renter. And you were saying that this kind of a renting generation is a new thing in Romania. You said that you're kind of like you're part of the first generation of renters because it didn't exist under communism.
Yeah, what you need to know about Romania is that housing was never a crisis before, because during the communist regime, like, the socialist government pretty much built flats for everyone, for all the workers. And during the 90s, after the communist regime fell, most of them were privatized and they were sold by the state to their owners for very little money. But now what's happening is that the market cannot keep up, especially in the bigger cities, because most of the people now are flooding to like basically free cities, to Cluj, to Bucharest and Timișoara. But the market cannot keep up, so prices are going up.
And you were talking about this a little bit earlier, where you were saying Romania kind of exports people. It has more immigrants, people leaving the country than any other country in Europe, and that basically people are leaving the countryside and they're going to other countries looking for work, or they're going into the big cities, the three big cities.
Yeah, actually we have, like, statistically speaking, not just the EU, like, if you look at the percentage of people that are actually immigrants, we are second in the world after Syria.
Wow.
And Syria has a civil war, you know, and we don't have any wars here. So, yeah, but it's a very interesting movement, you know, because during the 90s, a lot of people moved away from the cities because the major industries were privatized and a big part of them were actually torn down and sold for scraps. So a lot of people became unemployed. So they moved back to the villages. But then after 2000, people started moving again to a few big cities. And a lot of the people actually went to work in the European Union after 2007, when Romania joined. So now we have there's no really official number, but the estimates are between like 3 or 4 million people who are working abroad. And Romania has like a 15 million people population.
Wow. Now, how did you get involved in this movement?
Pretty much the whole housing movement in Cluj-Napoca started 8 years ago with a high-profile eviction. There was a community of Roma people who were living pretty close to the center. There were about 50 or 60 families. Some of them were living in houses owned by the local authorities. Mm-hmm. They were renting them as social housing. But a few of them also, they started building informal settlements because they've been living there since the 90s. So the families grew and their kids basically started building around the legal houses. And then 1.8 years ago in December, and it was close to Christmas, it was winter, it was snowing. So the municipality evicted them, right in the neck of winter.
Mm.
And what was even more scandalous about the whole situation is that they promised they will relocate them in social housing. But then after people got evicted and they got transported to their new so-called houses, they found out that the houses were some kind of really small buildings next to the garbage dump.
Yeah, you were saying that's like a neighborhood that of like shanty towns almost.
Yeah, next to the garbage dump, there's a Roma settlement that has been going on there since the 60s. They've been a part of the community has been living there picking waste.
Mm.
Because this is also another problem in Romania. There's almost no formal recycling. So most of the recycling is done by waste pickers, and they live in a kind of favela type settlement. So the municipality relocated the people who were living in the center of the city next to the garbage dump only because they were Roma. You know, they had almost no connection with the communities there.
Now,
when the movement started.
That's when the movement started. But can you explain a little bit who the Roma are?
Well, this is it's a very complicated history. I'm not going to get into the whole history of
it. Sure. I mean, I think of Roma, I think of like gypsies, but I know that that's sort of like a bad word, but it's confusing because you're in Romania and I don't know if there's a connection.
No, because in Romania, the Romanian word for gypsy is tzigan, which comes from but this is like the slur word.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes from the Greek word, atiganos or something. I don't know the correct pronunciation. And it actually means untouchable.
Hmm.
So Roma is the way, basically in the Romani language, Roma means person. So this is the non-racist term, if you want to put it like this.
Uh-huh.
But the whole situation with the Roma is, I don't know how many people know this, but Roma lived in slavery in Romania for almost 500 years.
Huh.
So when they were released from slavery in the 19th century, at the end of the 19th century, they were released but without any kind of reparation.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is a big chunk of the population actually went back to work for their old slave masters.
Hmm.
And basically, until before the Second World War, you have this historical, gap where the Roma pretty much lived as semi-slaves, without actually owning any property. Like the first regime who actually changed this a bit was the communist regime. It was the first time when the Roma were actually integrated. I mean, integrated is a nice word to put. They tried to assimilate the Roma,
mm-hmm,
in a not very democratic way, just to put it like this. But at least it was the first time that the Roma actually received some property and a house over their head,
And then now they've been kicked out of those properties.
Yeah, because again, what happened, especially in the historical cities, the communists nationalized the properties that were owned by the former bourgeois. And in some cases, they were, moved in the poorer strata of the society, and in many cases they were the Roma. But then after the 90s, the properties were given back to their former owners, so they got evicted. Mm-hmm. So they didn't even have the chance to actually buy the buildings they were staying in. Mm. And what happened, and this is not just in Cluj, like in many cities in Romania, they got the permission, not legal, but like this tacit agreement to go and live in informal settlements near the city.
Wow, that's a kind of displacement we've never encountered before.
Yeah, I think it's more common to, I don't know, South America maybe.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sure that's happening in other former Soviet bloc or communist socialist countries Eastern Europe.
It's also a common situation in Bulgaria and in the Balkans in general. Hmm. I mean, you can imagine how life is near the garbage dump, you know. I remember they were telling me stories how it was for them where they actually moved there. Because it was so new, and I don't know if you managed to look up some pictures, but you can search Patarit on the internet, and you can see, because now it's pretty good visibility in the media for a few years now, and there it's like going on another planet, you know. You're staying next to the garbage dump, there's stray dogs everywhere. At night, there's almost no public lighting, there's no plumbing, there's no nothing. People rely on one or two fountains to drink water. Mm. Everything is polluted. And this is, again, another problem. And another thing, the garbage dump has been functioning illegally since the 90s because it's not an ecological, you know, dumping space.
Right. Well, yeah, it can't be a safe place either, I'm imagining, to live in those shanty towns. Is there a lot of crime there?
Yeah, of course there's crime. I mean, in a way, I think it's a lot better than people actually expect it to be. Of course, there are problems with... one of the big problems is, prostitution. But, for example, and drugs, especially, I don't know how you call it in English. I think it's, the designer drugs, you know, the legal stuff. Hmm. So there are a lot of kids who are in pretty bad shape because of them. Mm. But again, these are problems that are pretty much common to all the poorer areas in the city.
So tell me a little bit more about what happened when the social housing, and when you say social housing, you mean what we would call subsidized housing or public housing. It's paid for by the government or the taxpayer. And so what you have now is communism went away, and these buildings, apartment buildings, the units were sold, were either given back to the original owners or sold to the current residents, and now those owners are renting those units out. They're the landlords.
Yeah. Yeah. For example, one of the common things is that right next to Cluj, there's this really, in a way, kind of like a suburb, but it's not the American style of suburb. It's with apartments, but it was built kind of in the same way as the suburbs in the US are built, you know, with a lot of buildings who look the same and, you know, this kind of standardized housing with really shitty quality and built really cheaply.
Sounds like the suburbs.
Yeah, and a really poor infrastructure. I remember the first years where people were moving massively there because it was so cheap. And there were a lot of problems with the infrastructure. Now, if you need to get there to the city, and the distance is 10 kilometers, mm-hmm. it takes about 2 hours. Jeez. And what happened, that a lot of people actually, they either got mortgages, you know, or they got bank loans where they guaranteed with their former apartments, you know, to buy a new apartment in the new suburb. And now they're actually paying that mortgage or the loan by loaning, by renting the apartment, you know.
So you have buildings with really dozens and dozens of landlords. It's not just like people are in an apartment building and there's one owner for the whole building. It's more like what we would call a condo here in the United States, where there are dozens and dozens of landlords in a building and they're all renting them these units out, and as the place becomes more expensive, they keep raising the rent. So it's many landlords that we're talking about.
Yeah, this is one of our problems too when we're thinking about strategies and what we can do. Because in many places, if you look, for example, at what's happening in Berlin, there you can apply like the classic union strategy, you know, because if you are a lot of renters against one landlord, if you call a rent strike, then you can do a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm.
But here, because it's so common to be like one-on-one with the landlord, and because the demand for rent is so high, it's very easy for a landlord to just kick you out and then find another renter.
Right.
So this is, yeah, this was one of the main problems we were facing. So in this case, what was really good for us is that, you know, we actually tried to offer legal support, because as I was telling you yesterday, most of the rents aren't even declared at the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have exact numbers about how many renters are in the city. Mm-hmm. Like the real estate agency estimate about 20,000, mm-hmm. It could be even more. But the problem is, at least from our estimates and how we see the situation, I think about at least 70 or 80% of those people are living without any kind of legal form.
Right.
So they can be kicked out at any moment. And it's not uncommon for people to get kicked out, you know, from today to the next day without any good reason. And this is why what we were trying to, in a way, kind of create this tenant culture, to tell people that, you know, you have rights, but you need to protect them, because the legislation and the law doesn't really protect them. So you need to take care of yourself, to have a contract, to ask for a receipt, even if you have a handwritten receipt when you pay money. So this was, you know, like the day-to-day grind of doing the administrative boring stuff.
Yeah, you have to really, like you say, build a tenant culture in a place that didn't have a tenant culture at all.
Because here I think a lot of people are, I mean, I know it was like this 10 years ago. There are a lot of people are imagining that, okay, we're going to rent while we're in college, but after that, we're going to buy our own apartment and we're not going to be renters anymore. But now it's becoming more and more difficult for people to buy an apartment. I mean, it's without actually being in debt for, I don't know, 30 or 40 years.
Right. And like you say, it's there's so many landlords. It's not like a landlord class that you're fighting against. It's more, I don't know, democratized. We have kind of it's hard to kind of rally people against the landlords when the landlords aren't just like a very small minority of the population that people don't personally know. We have the same situation with Airbnb here in Portland, where the Airbnb people are taking a lot of housing units out of our city, but people sympathize with Airbnb owners because they know Airbnb owners, you know, or they think, well, someday I might want to buy a house and I might need Airbnb to help me pay for it. So it's a harder message to create an us and them, us versus them message doesn't really work all the time.
Yeah, it's true. And also, I mean, if you look at the people who are renting and why they are renting, like, a lot of the landlords are living pretty much the same precarious life as the tenants. You know, some of them are workers who are earning a shitty wage. and they're supplementing their wage through renting, you know. So yeah, it's a very complicated situation, and in a way it's also why we never tried to make it about us versus them. I mean, except it was like a really bad situation when somebody was like really taking advantage, like a landlord was really taking advantage of the tenant. But we've been trying to get like regulation at the municipal level, you know, so we don't need to have these confrontations with the landlords.
Right. And the government has a role to play in the problem, because you were saying that, that things really started to change when you got a new mayor. What happened then?
No, basically, before this mayor, like Emil Bock, who is kind of like this hardline neoliberal, we had, I mean, the city was pretty much stagnating during the 90s and at the beginning at the 2000s. We had this really nationalist mayor who, I mean, was there was pretty much no investment in the city because everybody was seeing the city as this really unfriendly, not multicultural city. Because what you need to know about Cluj, there's also a big Hungarian population. There are about 15 to 20% of Hungarians. And the Romanian nationalist mayor, basically his whole discourse was built against the Hungarians. So now we have this really nice neoliberal but multicultural mayor.
Right.
Who, yeah, was very friendly to business. The multinationals that were coming to Cluj and also in other big cities in Romania, they're getting a lot of tax breaks. A lot of zoning laws are curbed, you know, to make way for office buildings. And I think this is the direction that the city is moving in. I mean, if you look at the program of the municipality, there's almost nothing mentioned about measures to eradicate poverty or social measures. Everything is about innovation, creativity, attracting the creative classes, attracting the IT multinationals. Because being a university city, and in Romania, the public, I mean, most of the, especially like the bigger universities are public and they're free. So you have a pretty good trained workforce who is paid for by the state, basically. Well, so yeah, it's really easy for a multinational corporation to come to Cluj, get a workforce that is paid like a fifth maybe of what is paid in the West or in Central Europe.
This is what we see around the U.S. and increasingly around the world. It's the same formula. And, you know, there's a report that I'm going to quote. Well, there's a report that I quoted earlier in this show from your local university's architecture department that described gentrification as the climax of international neoliberalism. And for those folks who are listening that don't know what that term is, we don't really use that term in the U.S., but it, it just means, you know, that kind of laissez-faire capitalism, no regulations, international trade, sort of what many people in the U.S. just think of as conservatism. But yeah, the term neoliberalism is more common in Europe. And that's what happens, right? It's just money comes in from all over the place once it becomes easier, once the regulations change and people begin to see that a place is friendly to investment. And there's also kind of like a cool factor, right, that Cluj has. We also see that as like, it's kind of artsy, it's young. Like you say, it's a university town. That's another draw.
Yeah, for example, now we have this really big festival, which is also very, it's happening right in the center of the city. So we have, I think this year is going to be like the fifth edition or fourth, I don't know. And it, you know, it's a really big festival. There are about 100,000 people who are coming out of the city for this festival.
Mm.
And it's happening. This is pretty uncommon for a festival this size to actually happen in the center of the city. So they're actually closing down a big chunk of the city for this, which is a private festival, you know. So, yeah, I think most of the politics of the local municipalities are in this way. You know, they're trying to attract hip businesses, you know, the hip crowd. And of course, they claim that somehow all this wealth that is generated is going to trickle down to the rest of us. But this is not really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell, like, in day-to-day life that now it's almost impossible to find a plumber.
Huh.
You know, so it's, yeah, it's very common that, like, this, you know, jobs, like, I don't know, blue collar jobs, if you want to call them, are slowly disappearing. Mm. You know, and it's really hard, you know, to find them now.
So what are your strategies? What is your plan?
Yeah, as I was telling you yesterday, now housing in the last year has become one of the main issues in the, I don't know how to call it, activist or leftist scene or whatever. So it's pretty much concentrated in these three cities, like Cluj-Napoca, Bucharest, and Timișoara. So we're slowly trying to build alliances with other organizations. For example, now we have this alliance, which is called the Block for Housing. And right now we are working on a project where we're going to do a research together with the trade unions in mm-hmm. Romania. I mean, the trade unions in these three cities more specifically. And slowly we're trying to introduce this issue in the trade union, even though, yeah, the trade union movement is anything but powerful now, but still they have, I mean, the biggest trade union in Romania still has 500,000 members. So it's still good.
And it's a working class issue. It's the working class people who are being displaced.
Yeah. And this is what we're trying to tell them, that, okay, it's good that you're fighting for bigger wages, but if those raises are then taken away by the landlords, you're not actually winning anything, you know. Mm-hmm. You're just moving money from one exploiter to the other.
And we certainly saw success here in Oregon. We're about to be the first state in the U.S. to pass statewide rent control, and that is because of, in part, an alliance with the labor unions here.
Yeah, I think it's really important to connect it with other issues. You know, for example, as I was telling you, what's happening now with the labor movement in the UK, you know, under Corbyn, and housing is one of the big issues. And they are one of, I think maybe they're like the first major political party in all of Western Europe and maybe all of the Western world that have actually promised, you know, that they will tackle rent increase and housing problems, you know, in a really systemic way and actually build social housing, you know, as it was done, I don't know, 60 years ago.
Where else do you see, when you look around Europe and in your neighborhood, so to speak, do you see other communities who are achieving victories that you think you could also achieve, you could get to?
I think now we're not actually at the point of victories. I think there were struggles who were more successful than others. For example, what's happening in Berlin. And I don't know if you look at the situation in Berlin, there are regular marches, you know, for housing, and they gather like 10,000, 20,000 people.
Mm.
And they managed to actually forced the local government to introduce rent regulation, at least at the legislative level. The problem there is that this experiment, it's a bit controversial because nobody can actually tell if it worked or not, because like the evidence, it's a bit contradictory. It seems that even though they passed the laws to regulate rent, they're not really enforcing them. So the landlords are still raising rent how they want to do it. So, yeah. Another great example is Poland. Poland is also like a East European, former Soviet nation. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit closer to our situation. And then, and there we could see like a pretty big tenant movement that has been growing in the last years. And they've been a pretty big inspiration to us because we got in contact with them and learning their stories, you know, how they started with five people working for 2 years. Wow. And then suddenly growing to thousands. It shows that, you know, there's always potential that maybe you don't see it now, but it's there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as we see in our film Priced Out, and we've seen since the film ended, it took years for the movement to build. There was a lot of coalition building behind the scenes that went on before people took to the streets and started protesting. And then people took to the streets and the elected officials were removed, and they're still being removed. You know, you and I, we talked about maybe having somebody from the Portland City Council speak after a screening of Priced Out in Romania via Skype. And we have two new elected city councilors who have basically been put into power because of the outrage around housing prices. You know, there are candidates who are very familiar with the housing crisis and gentrification. And so when the political structure changes, then you see some changes, because sometimes, just working with the existing politicians isn't going to help. But either way, it takes a long time sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of the problems here, as I was telling you, that there's a pretty big consensus in the city about our mayor. In the last election, he won with like 80% of the votes. Mm. So... and there aren't actually, he doesn't really have an opponent now. So it's very hard to make out of housing, you know, like a real issue. Now there are some newer parties who are trying to at least tackle this issue. But yeah, I know, they're also pretty conservative in their way they're seeing it. You know, they're talking about, for example, the more liberal parties, they are talking about how we need to relax regulation even more, so more buildings can be built. Mm-hmm. So then you release some pressure from the market. But the thing is, and this is one of the things that we've been constantly telling them, that Cluj-Napoca is one of the cities that has been building the most apartments in the country. But if you look at the prices, they've been constantly growing up, you know. And each year, you know, you reach a ceiling, and then the next year it takes off from that ceiling. You know, the prices don't go down. They never go down. So they're not building for the people who need it most, or the average, you know, working class people who are not doing the creative jobs.
Exactly. And we have those types of people here, too, in Portland and in the U.S. And, you know, increasing supply is good, but... it doesn't take pressure off. It takes a very long time. Even if it does do a little bit, it takes, you know, it can lower prices over a very, very long period of time. So yeah, crisis, I mean, when you have housing, a crisis, doesn't help.
Yeah, and this is the problem. I mean, when you think about housing, it's not like any other, you know, commodity. It's not like, okay, I can afford not to buy a car and I'm going to take the public transport for 2 years when I'm going to raise money. But if you don't have a house, you're homeless, you know.
Exactly.
You cannot function as a member of society without a house or an apartment, because a house is a luxury here.
Exactly. And it's very hard to shop around for a house. You can't just go on Amazon and look at dozens and dozens of different choices and click on one and return it if you don't like it. It's a house.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you have no options, you have no choices.
Yeah. And what happens, like, for example, if you look at Romania, we have the highest rate of overcrowding in the whole of the European Union. We also have the longest period of, how do you call it? It's like the age that young people are living with their families.
Oh, huh.
So they're actually, like, in medium, young people are starting to leave, with their families until 35.
Wow.
You know, and this is, you know, crazy to live with your parents until 35 because you cannot afford the house. Hmm. And everybody's really upset here because the marriage rate is going down, the population is declining, you know, but nobody cares about creating the conditions for you to have like a decent life for your family.
Well, what can we do to help? What can the listeners here of this show do, or what should they know about so that they can be assistance?
I don't know. I think it's important for this issue, you know, of housing to be like a global one. Because I think now, because of the internet and social media, you know, everything is connected. So a victory in Portland can be an inspiration, you know, everywhere. Just as a victory in Berlin can be an inspiration here, just as we don't have that many victories to inspire people until now, but hopefully in the future.
Well, if you're listening to this show, you can reach Vlad through this post, this podcast. We'll have links involved in the post. And please reach out to him if you've got some words of support or encouragement or inspiration or some great ideas, or can connect him and the movement with some folks you think are helpful. And we will continue to support your movement in every way that we can. And hopefully we'll do a screening and a conversation and talk about the Portland relocation fee when we do talk to you the next time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vlad. Best of luck, man. Give him hell.
Yeah, and the same.
Yeah, and hang in there.
Yeah, it's okay. We're not going anywhere.
All right.
That's why we're telling people when, because usually one of the responses we get, like, if you don't like it in Cluj, you should move. And we always tell them, nah, we're not going anywhere.
Hell no. Right on. So that's the situation in Romania. Hopefully we'll be able to partner up with Jamie Duhamel, like we did in the screening at Long Beach, California, and talk to folks after the screening in Romania via Skype and talk about Portland's experience with the relocation fee and now with rent control, because that's really the most efficient way to help renters in the short term.
The one part that really got me was hearing, you know, the structure, you know, where people were living around the dumps.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something that you don't really hear about too often here in the U.S.
Garbage pickers, people who like pick garbage for a living.
But there is a subculture of it,
mm-hmm.
but it's usually kind of viewed as where they're scrappers,
right?
You know, opposed to the way he kind of described it.
Yeah, it's like a shantytown that these Roma folks live in, and, you know, just like I just saw in the, you know, in the shanty towns of Medellin, where they're like, you know, building their own homes out of scraps. It's they've got a lot of problems there, that hopefully, if we think as a community, as we act and have this conversation on the internet around the country and around the world, we can be an inspiration and a network for folks who are dealing with these situations that are common throughout the world and that are unique to their communities.